This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
It's remarkable that John Jantz and I had never been introduced to each other before now. Everyone knows John and his work helping small businesses at Duct Tape Marketing, and Huffington Post calls him one of the top 100 people to follow on Twitter, Forbes calling his site one of the top 100 for entrepreneurs. But it's John's new book that interests me. It's called Duct Tape Selling, and it really is the best and most practical book on selling I've ever read. The release date is this Tuesday, April 22nd, and you can go pre-order it right now on Amazon.com. There's a link in the show notes. But before you go there, let's get started with my new friend, John Jantz. Hey, John, good to see you.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I'm excited about your new book, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to be because it's another selling book, and I'm writing one, and I see myself in that going, we need another sales book. Why? But you have something to offer here, and it's different. And I'm going to start off by saying this, and I'm not kissing up to you at the beginning of this call, but it is, in my opinion, the best book I've read on social selling. And I do believe that it's really going to be a helpful book to put in two groups of people's hands in my mind. The first group, and a lot of what I do, I write and speak to B2B salespeople. And I do actually think this book will be helpful and useful for them, and not the kind of book that you say, well, that applies maybe if you're an entrepreneur and you're doing what you guys do. I can see that. Yeah. And the second group is small business people and entrepreneurs really, really need to read this, because if they fail, and they do fail, and we know why, it's because they don't put selling first. And it's not that they don't have a good idea. It's not that they can't create value. It's the fact that they don't put selling first. So I'll stop here and let you introduce yourself for a minute, and then we'll run down the path here together.
Well, as you said, I have a company called, I think you said it anyway, I have a company called Duct Tape Marketing. And I really originally set out to write this book, just as you said, for the, you know, the salesperson. And a lot of it's because I am a small business owner, have been for years. And I think that I realized, even though I call my company Duct Tape Marketing, I think I realized that, you know, a great deal of what I do is actually selling. And that's true, I think, of most small businesses, whether they choose to look at it that way or whether they choose to look at it, I think, in an incorrect light. I think that is ultimately what they're doing. And so, but I really set out to write this book for a lot of the salespeople who are finding it difficult to do some of the things that they've been told to do for years, because, you know, we now have access to perfect information. I don't even have a phone on my desk. I mean, there's just a lot of the traditional kind of building relationships and going out there and knocking on doors. Yeah, exactly.
It's the only thing you carry, right?
Right, that's right. Knocking on doors that we just don't really allow anymore. I mean, that's not how we want to buy, let's put it that way. And I think that that's what, more than anything else, has changed the way people need to sell. And so this book really does, I mean, the subtitle probably says it all, is Think Like a Marketer, Sell Like a Superstar. And so this book really is asking, or in some cases pleading with salespeople to start really doing some of the things that used to be left to their marketing department, like, you know, identifying an ideal client, like building their own reputation, you know, like figuring out, you know, what it is that they truly do add to the equation that has value. And I think that while there's a lot of cultural change that'll have to go on in organizations for that to happen, I think for the individual salesperson, it's absolutely the best way for them to build their career.
Let's start with this idea about sales and marketing, because what you're saying is, in my opinion, a change that's sort of revolutionary. You're now responsible for marketing. And what I see happen is marketers don't understand the role of the salesperson, and that the salesperson has to develop a relationship. And they give the salesperson, for example, here's the ones that I get that show up in my Gmail, but it's already been filtered out as spam right out of the gate. And it says, you know, I'd love to have an appointment, and here's our white paper. Click this link. And then if I click the link, I don't get the white paper. I get to give them my name, how much revenue my company does, my title. And that's marketing's view of what the salesperson should be doing.
Well, that's because you're also being scored as to whether or not, you know, that salesperson should now pick up the phone, right?
If I'm a lead, that's right. And if it would be so different, and this is what I counsel and coach salespeople to do, download the white paper yourself and send them the white paper with a note, because then I'm nurturing the relationship and I'm getting the message. I'm teaching, I'm coaching, I'm helping them think about their business from the perspective of, here's what I know about what you could do to improve. And when I put it behind the wall, people do the same thing that I do. They opt out. But marketing's view is everything's behind the wall until you give us your information. We can score you as a lead. But for a salesperson, thinking that way is going to end up hurting their results, because it's not adding value to the relationship early.
Well, and I contest that by the time that lead gets scored and appropriately filtered down to sales, a lot of times they've already made a lot of decisions, and all they really now need you for is to show up and give them the price. And that's certainly not a great way to make a living. And so, you know, a lot of what you just described, download the white paper. I'd go even farther. Clip out one or two salient paragraphs from the white paper and say, hey, remember that conversation we were talking about today? I think this really applies to you. Just thinking of you, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that you do that enough times, and all of a sudden, then they're going to want to really have you come and provide, you know, not the price, but come and provide some insight as to how they should even look at their problem.
That's what we're really trying to do, is to teach them how to look at their problem. We want to show them that there's a better way and that there's a gap. And most of what my experience is that in the world, customers have what we call latent dissatisfaction. They don't know that they should be unhappy. And if they knew, they would be unhappy. If they knew, then they would be unhappy and they'd do something about it. But that's what the kind of conversation that we can spark when we think like a marketer is, look, here's a gap. Maybe you don't perceive it, but now we can help you see that.
Yeah, and I even think one of the great opportunities is, I think a lot of people think very small, and when they're looking at this one little leaking hole in the boat, and they're trying to fix that, and we as salespeople, I think, need to be saying, hey, you know what, there's a giant hurricane coming, as a matter of fact, and maybe you ought to think about that, you know, challenge a little differently. And I think that you know, I know that when people do that with me, you know, all of a sudden I. You know, when I think I start out this book with this phrase, it kind of changes the context of, you know, how I view that salesperson. And I think that more than anything else, that's, you know, the role of the salesperson has been, you know, so put into, you know, an unfortunate box in some cases, that somebody who really breaks out of that and becomes a consultant or a guide, I think really is somebody that I want to show up. I still get these voicemails, even though I don't have a phone, right? But I have a I have a device that will actually allow people to leave a message on it, and I still get these from salespeople that say something like, "I don't really know what you guys do down there, but I'd like to come and spend 30 minutes finding out if there's any synergy." I can't tell, you know, there must be somebody out there selling that script, because
you didn't look at my website before you made the call to figure out what I do.
I mean, even if you didn't know, why would you say something so incredibly silly when you could actually probably find out what I had for breakfast today if you looked very hard?
If you got to Instagram, you would in a lot of cases figure out breakfast too. It's interesting, because the role now for salesperson is business person. It's business advisor, and you need to be almost a general manager in your thinking. You have to think about their whole business, and you're right. I use a different analogy. Mine's even maybe more awful than yours. You're not treating a hangnail. If the person has cancer in some part of their body, you actually go have to help them deal with the biggest, nastiest, foulest challenge that they have, even though they might not have yet wanted to face it. But that's when you're going to earn the spot to be the trusted advisor for talking about those things and helping them with those issues.
Yeah, and you know, there's one thing I do address in the book, but I'd be really curious about your take on this. In some ways, we're saying not only do they have to have a new mindset, you know, salespeople are probably going to have to adopt some or learn some new skills, do some things they aren't comfortable with. And does that necessarily suggest, if I'm a VP of sales or I'm a sales manager, that I should be looking for, you know, somebody different than that prototypical salesperson that's, you know, that's always made their quota, you know, quarter after quarter?
I think it does. And I'll tell you, I think the smile on my face, shine on my shoes, you know, 1970 persuasive, manipulating kind of, you know, character is now gone, and that's not what works anymore. I think it's trust and caring, you know, people without a self-orientation with real business acumen. That's what you need, is someone with real business acumen, or someone who wants to learn that you can help grow and understand the way business works and how we really help people.
Yeah, you see more and more organizations, and some of the folks that I talked to in writing this book, more and more organizations putting technical people on teams, putting writers on teams, putting customer service people on sales teams, and really, you know, trying to create that perfect blend of, like you said, almost, you know, a business serving that customer, that prospect's journey, as opposed to, hey, it's, we've thrown it over the wall to the salesperson, good luck.
Let me frame that up for you in a question then, because what we're doing is we're trying to create value for that prospect, or value for the client eventually when they sign on. And you talk about value a lot. I talk about value a lot. Why do you suggest that we give away more, that we try to find a way to give value?
Well, I think that's the best way to establish a relationship. If you think, you know, if you think in terms of that, that instead of the relationship being, okay, you're here to sell me something, you know, I need to be on guard. In fact, perhaps because I've made bad decisions in my past, and so, you know, I have to guard my money. And so I think that what happens when somebody gives, somebody's useful, somebody actually you don't mind when they call, because last time they called, they had a really good idea for you, or had somebody you needed to meet, and so, you know, that you know it you don't make any money doing that for maybe 6 months or whatever amount of time it is, but all of a sudden then when I have that challenge, you're the first person I'm going to think of, or you're the first person I'm going to refer, because I know that you're doing something that's useful when you're around, as opposed to being a pest. I mean, and again, I hate to pick on some of those salespeople out there, but I still get people that 8, 10, 12 times are, you know, all they're doing is leave me a message about wanting to get together. All they are doing is send me an email about wanting, you know, to do a demo or something. To pitch me. And it's like, you know, I gave you my answer. It's when I didn't respond.
Well, I want to say one thing, and I didn't know you until just recently, and that's a crime. Chris Brogan apologized. He said, I should have introduced you. I said, well, you didn't know. You didn't know we didn't know each other. I should have known you long before. But in reading your book, you carried a bag, and you were a sales guy. I love this about you, because it's not like you don't have the experience base of knowing what happened in the past and where we are now. And then your dad was a manufacturer's rep, and so you grew up in a household where your family ate because your dad sold, and that's the way it worked. And now we're at this different point, and you are a very well-recognized figure in the world of social media and the internet because of what you've done with Duct Tape Marketing. And you've used this new toolkit that you're prescribing in a lot of ways. So I want to ask you to talk about two things. And I want to just preface this, because I know some of this stuff is tough for salespeople to do and some of it's easier.
Yeah.
So the first, we'll do a two-parter here, but the first part is, how important has blogging been for you to establish yourself as a thought leader? That's part one. Yeah. And part two, we'll talk about LinkedIn for a minute, because you talk in the book about making your own industry group and going ahead and owning that space yourself. And I want to have you chat about how you've done that and what it's done for you and what you've seen it do for your clients.
Well, so the first one, blogging, and again, I'm a bit of an exception. I was putting products online, or kind of documenting my course, if you will, online. And this is 2002, 2003. And this thing that we actually called it a weblog, was starting to show up as I'd go out there, and I'd think, well, this looks, you know, I need to publish lots of information. I had already decided that was how I was going to attract search engine traffic. And this seemed like an easy way to do it. So it wasn't like I had looked out there and said, I'm going to be a blogger. You know, it just kind of fell into it. But certainly I stuck with it. And I was consistent, and I, you know, did almost every day, and it really allowed me, you know, that I would say that in some ways, certainly the notoriety that came, because, you know, at some point in 2004, 2005 or so, you know, every newspaper editor in America said, go find me one of those blogger people. And so I did got all kinds of exposure just because of the fact that I had at that point, you know, one of the more popular blogs, because there just weren't that many out there. But I would also attribute the fact that it created in me a habit of writing every single day, whether it was 200 words or 700 words, but it it changed the way I thought in a lot of ways, because I was constantly, when I was working with a client, when I was reading something else, I was constantly thinking about ways that I could articulate that, or ways that I could break that down and put it in writing. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, people get hung up on the term blog. It's just software that that actually makes publishing pretty easy. And
I have people ask all the time, "Where's your book?" Well, it's in editing right now, but I've written 1.5 million words over 4.5 years. I mean, I've got 27 books if you want to look at the archive link, and it's that habit.
Yeah, so that's a lot of it. But then I will say the other thing, just what you mentioned, the sheer volume, the body of work that I've been able to focus on 10 or 12 pretty tightly focused themes has really made me, it's an asset. In some ways, and I don't want to say this in case like somebody from Google's really, you know, out to get somebody, but I mean, it's maybe almost bulletproof in some cases for, you know, search engine traffic for certain types of small business marketing terms. And it's not that, you know, I have that much authority necessarily, but I just have that much volume and that much age in the asset. And I, you know, I talk a lot about that in the book. I think that when people start saying, "Well, gosh, I don't have time to do that blogging stuff," and oh my God, you know, you think about people in a career. And let's face it, you know, hopefully many of your sales folks actually view what they're doing as a career. That you know, you think about all the people that go back and get an MBA and do things to advance their career, and a lot of times it's at night and, you know, around the family. And you know, I think that you can look at building this asset of a platform, whatever that looks like for you, even if you're doing it at night and the company's not real thrilled about it, you know, it's probably something that you ought to consider doing, because that asset will actually allow you to deliver more value to your customers, probably to your company, and certainly it might be something that would be portable. I would suggest that, you know, you could take to somebody another opportunity.
Let's talk about the second group of that before you talk about LinkedIn and groups. But the second group is entrepreneurs. And when I hear them say, "I don't have time to blog," you don't have time not to. And I don't understand the mindset. I know it's some of it's the discipline of doing it. It's the fear of letting your voice out there and the criticism that comes with that. But it's marketing, and that marketing lives there when you're not there, and it's teaching and it's sharing your message and it's providing value. If you don't put that first, the operation side of the business is always going to have something for you to do that feels good and feels like work that doesn't get you a customer. Yeah. I mean, when are you going to do it? And what you said is you put that first and you created a volume of work, and then at some point it starts to generate returns on its own.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing, because I mean, I'm sure that the first, I don't know how many, 500 blog posts I wrote didn't make me a nickel. But now, it generates direct revenue. I mean, it turns into all kinds of opportunities for me. I mean, I can't tell you how often I have somebody out of the media contact me completely out of the blue because they found some blog post that, scarily, I wrote back in like 2006 or something, you know.
And you're like, I hope that's not embarrassing, whatever they're looking at.
It's, you know, and this is such a tired metaphor for sales folks, but I mean, it really is kind of that farming, you know, approach. You know, you're planting all those seeds that are going to end up bearing fruit later.
Talk about LinkedIn and industry groups.
Yeah, well, I think that when I talk to a lot of sales folks, I mean, they're, you know, like, "We're on social media. I got a LinkedIn profile." You know, I mean, it kind of stops there in a lot of cases, or they use it to, you know, to start searching around. They get a paid account and they start hunting around for people that they can make connections with that might be in a prospect or that they're after, company that they're after. And I just think that it's kind of a missed opportunity, because I think there are also so many ways, of course, to use. If you think in terms of it truly being a network, right, which it is, there's so many ways to really use it to not only, I've heard people use this term, I use it in the book as well, to kind of socially surround your prospects and your customers. So it's not just what they're doing, but, you know, who they report to, who they follow, who influences them. And I think that, you know, you start building kind of that network. And one of the examples that I use in the book is, you know, you find out a customer's boss's boss is, and you introduce your boss's boss, you know, to them. I mean, I think that, you know, that kind of networking that I think, I think made a lot of sense to people offline, and then but then sort of seems to go out the window when we go to these new online tools. Is certainly something that people should be doing. But then, as you mentioned, the group approach is something that I've been touting actually for years for small business owners. You know, anybody really who wants to build their authority. I mean, if you can help facilitate the building of a community, and again, it's not going to be a community built around your great product that you want to sell them, but around an idea or an interest or something that people want to get together to talk about and discuss, and you can be seen as kind of the facilitator of that and the builder of that, that can become a truly great asset. And you know, let's say you sell insurance, but you build this networking group. There actually is an example. I can't remember if I use it in the book or not. I've used it when I talk. There's an example of a group on the East Coast. It was an independent or individual insurance salesperson, and he wanted to go to networking events in his town because that's where he met other business owners and you know, potentially mined some of those for leads. And so he said, you know, it's really hard to find networking events, the calendar and the schedule. And so I'm going to build this LinkedIn group for our town. And everybody that comes in, all they need to do is just make sure that they're telling everybody about all the networking events that are going on in town. And this thing grew to about 5,000 people. He wasn't selling insurance in it, but lo and behold, the connections that he made through that, and of course then they would take them offline and you know, started doing some things just as a group once it got big enough, creating their own networking events. So you know, he just built a tremendous book of business basically, and he'll tell you, you know, basically from just facilitating this group that was of, you know, like-minded people who had a similar interest.
I got a $1 million account on LinkedIn a few years ago, and it was the opposite. And what I see with salespeople is they're not engaged, you're right, but then they don't even complete their profile.
Yeah.
And when I reached out to a stakeholder, a decision maker, it was very tough for us to reach this individual. No one could get him, but my LinkedIn network was big enough I could get him. I sent him an in-mail, described how I thought I'd create value for him, and he responded back and said, love to have a cup of coffee with you and see if there is a fit. And I asked him when we sat down, I said, you've refused every attempt for us to ever meet with you. Why did you accept mine? And he said, I looked at your LinkedIn profile and I read your email about how you thought you could create value, and it lined up perfectly. And a lot of the salespeople, when they call or email and I look at them, I don't know whether or not they're worth spending time at with
right.
or not. And we're doing all this research and we think we're looking at them, but they're looking back.
Yeah.
And they get a chance to look back at you and say, what's this person look like? And if you're invisible, I mean, there's nobody who succeeds in sales by being a secret agent.
Yeah.
You got to be known. And I like your idea of surrounding your client everywhere they turn. You should be there with value, and whatever platform that is and whatever choices you make. And that's a lot of what this book leads to, is thinking about how do you do this.
Yeah, I would completely agree, and I think that these groups, you know, are a great way for you to also, I mean. You think that, let's say you get 2,000-3,000 people in one of these groups. Well, every single one of them is looking at you as sort of the leader of that group. Well, you know, that is going to, if you don't abuse that, that is going to lead to opportunities.
Yeah.
If nothing else, people are sharing your name out there. And I mean, you know, you just use that example of a lot of the, somebody can have the greatest solution in the world, but if we're worried about, and we all are, you know, is that going to be worth my 15 minutes? Is this person going to come waste my time? Because we've all had those situations. If we can't, you know, overcome that hurdle, we're never going to get to tell them about this incredible solution that we have. And so I think that that's, you know, certainly leads to your point.
Let me pitch the book real quick, and then I'll let you finish. But
sure.
The book is Duct Tape Selling Under the Duct Tape Marketing Brand, John Jantz. It's a wonderful book, and if you're listening to this and you want to figure out a couple things, one, how do I grow my business if I'm an entrepreneur? How do I put selling first, and how do I use this new toolkit? This is a good book for you to pick up. It's my favorite social selling book I've read. Although the book doesn't say social selling, so much of it is about the new reality and how you can effectively use these tools, and I think you did a terrific job laying that out. And then if you're a salesperson and you wonder, how can I incorporate this into my tasks when I have a quota and I have a sales manager and an RVP and I'm inside the big organization, I promise you what you hear here and what you see, you will be able to apply a lot of what you read in this book to what you're doing day to day. and it will be helpful. And that's my pitch for the book. I enjoyed it a lot, and I really appreciate you coming on here.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. If I can add one more thing, there's another group that I think needs to read this book, and that's the head of marketing in a lot of organizations, because I think the biggest thing, you know, you can't – inbound selling is not the same as inbound marketing. It really needs to be something that falls from it and is integrated totally into it. And I think a lot of marketing organizations need to read this book in order to get sales and marketing actually working and thinking the same way.
And where do people go to contact you, John?
Well, so you can find anything really about me and the work that I do, blog, podcasts, all that good stuff at ducttapemarketing.com. But we did also create a site for the book, so it's ducttapeselling.com. And there's probably 200 resources, be it people or companies or tools that I mentioned in the book. And I built a page kind of chapter by chapter that has all those links, because that's sometimes a little frustrating when you're reading a book to have to like take notes about, oh, I'm going to go check that tool out and that tool out. Well, now you can actually read along
that's awesome.
with the book. So,
well, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
You can find John at ducttapemarketing.com, and you can get his new book, Duct Tape Selling, on Amazon.com this coming Tuesday. Also, follow John on Twitter at ducttape. This is Anthony Arino, and you can find me at thesalesblog.com. And when you get there, do sign up for my newsletter. It'll show up in your inbox every Sunday morning with great ideas that you can use to improve your sales now. And until then, I'll see you next week in the arena.